The following podcast is brought to you by Radio Southland and New Zealand On Air. Radio Southland is a community access media station based in Invercargill, New Zealand. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, radiosouthland.org.nz, for our contact details.
Hi everyone, I'm Nick and I'm the host of Nightlife at Radio Southland, where me and my co-hosts talk about the weird, wild and wonderful aspects of history and historical martial arts. Our plays are every Wednesday and Sunday and you can find us on Spotify. We'd love for you to tune in. And welcome back to Nightlife. I am Nick and once again I am joined by... no one. It's just me today. It was just me and you. And today I'm going to be talking about the Vikings. More specifically, what did they wear? What did they look like? What archaeological and written evidence is there to tell us what Viking Age people in Scandinavia and in England looked like? What did they wear? How did they groom themselves? And even maybe go into some weapons and armor. But before I get into that, me and my other co-hosts, who are unfortunately unable to attend right now, are all members of the Invercargill Medieval Club, where we practice historical martial arts and fight like they did in medieval times. We train twice a week at Aurora College at 7 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Apologies on behalf of Sean and George, who could not attend due to personal reasons. But don't worry, I'm here to take care of you with some lovely Viking Age facts. And first of all, Viking clothing. Now, I know a lot of listeners, a lot of you have seen the shows on Netflix like Vikings or The Last Kingdom, which are, as far as entertainment goes, pretty good TV shows. As historical, for historical facts, though, they're rather unreliable. And one of the most unreliable and unhistorical aspects of shows like Vikings or The Last Kingdoms is the clothing. Hollywood and, Netflix and the film industry always seems to fail to capture the color of the Viking Age. It's always these grim, grey and brown, dirty clothes, dirty people, and unkempt hair and stuff like that. But we know both by written and archaeological evidence that that just isn't true. We know that people in Scandinavia took really good care of themselves, and personal grooming was a very important part of Norse society. And we know this based on archaeological finds of fine clothing and of grooming items such as bone combs and written accounts such as the Arab adventurer Ibn Fadlan, who wrote about his encounters of Norse people in Russia and about how well-kept they were and their hair and their beards and stuff. But let's get into the clothing. What did Vikings wear? Now, when I say Vikings, I'm referring to the Norse people of Scandinavia. So those are the modern countries of Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and Iceland. These are the Norse people who, during the Viking Age of 793 to 1066, would launch numerous large-scale migrations and raids into Western and Eastern Europe from their Scandinavian homelands. Now, finds of clothes from this age are very rare, and almost all of the archaeological evidence of such finds are incomplete. So we had to supplement it with other evidence. So this is, carvings such as the Osberg carving, which is a wood carving in a burial ship. We can see how the Vikings saw themselves. And written evidence such as Anglo-Saxon accounts, and one of my main sources here is also the accounts of Ibn Fadlan, who was an Arab adventurer and historian who was sent to spread Islam to the Rus people, to the Slavic people in modern day Russia. And because the Vikings raided and traded quite frequently with the Slavs, he encountered many Norse people and wrote about them. So we have some of his accounts of them too. So we have to supplement the physical evidence with written evidence and artistic evidence. And Vikings dressed according to sex, age, and economic status. So what gender you were, what you did for a living, and how old you were could depend or could differ what you wore and what was expected of you to wear in society. So one of the most important things is colour. Colour. So Viking clothes were made of materials like wool and flax, typically woven by women, and they were dyed in intricate colours. We have evidence of reds, purples, yellows, greens, and blues. It's important to note that I think I mentioned this in our second episode of the podcast, where me and George talked about different historical TV shows, and I mentioned in The Last Kingdom, the rich Viking kings wear blue. That is actually accurate. The only evidence of blue dye that we have been found in the graves of the wealthy, such as the grave from the Mammon burial, in which a rather wealthy Viking figure who died during the 970s, his grave, he wore blue clothing. Now, women would typically wear a strap dress. So this is a dress that is stitched up at the sides and it's held up by straps at the shoulders. They could often be sewn to give it a very... It was rather tight. It wasn't like in the later Victorian or later medieval eras where having wide hips was the fashion. They were typically quite tight. And this was not only because, well, wide hips weren't a fashion trend at the time, but up in the cold, harsh winters of Scandinavia, sometimes materials can be, especially for the lower classes, could be rare. So you would have to use these materials quite sparingly at times. And so having tighter clothing could account for that. So under the dress, the women would typically wear some kind of undergarment. And research has shown from the Danish National History Museum makes the claim that different regions would prefer different kind of undergarments, such as Swedish Viking women wore, say, more pleated underwear, more thicker undergarments, whereas Danish would prefer plain linen or wool ones. So their underwear would typically types of shirts or shorts, typically made of simple, thin materials, just to provide a protective layer between your main clothing and the and your body. Women also tend to wear cloaks over their shoulders that were typically fashioned with brooches. And these brooches could be anything from a simple brass or iron clip to intricate bronze and even gold designs that would all depend on your wealth. It's important to note that even today, you know, you want to look nice when you go out into town, when you want to dress nice, and people back then wanted to dress nice too. That idea of, you know, you want to dress nice for your friends, you want to look nice, that hasn't changed. People would wear their wealth back then. If you were wealthy, you wanted to show it, but that you could afford a nice brass brooch or a lovely weaved woolen cloak, you would want to show that off. And you would want to dye it rich colours and stuff like that. Now, the cloak would often be decorated with woven borders, bands of fur. This not only was something that would make it look intricate and could display wealth, but in the cases of fur, it would also help keep warm. I don't know if you know this, but Norway, Sweden, and Denmark are notoriously cold countries. I mean, one of those countries is called Iceland. It's got to be a bit chilly. Around the waist, women would typically also wear belts. Now, these would not only keep the dress shape there and also trap heat within the dress, but you would also attach items to it, such as small leather purses for the keeping of items that women would need in their daily travels. Some common items that you might find in the purse of a Viking woman include bone combs for and other grooming equipment for their hair. You could find sewing needles, provisions if they were making a long journey, striker lights, which were metal objects used to start fires. If you were traveling, this would be incredibly important. And for women, depending on their profession, if they were, say, a seamstress, they would keep sewing equipment with them. If they were a merchant, they would probably have coin or silver of some kind as well. So, much like in the modern day, if you know, you're going out into town, whatever you put in your pockets or in your purse, it's what you need. And for women back in those days, it was much the same. As far as shoes go, they have leather. Shoes were typically made of leather, and they weren't really, not really built in the same way that the shoes you or I have. They didn't, like, you know, have this nice soft cushioning under it like sneakers. These were typically leather wrapped around in the shape of your feet. As far as children go, children's clothes are exceedingly rare. Off of the sources I have in front of me, I can't really see any evidence, like archaeologically, of children's clothing, but we can assume they were quite similar to, say, Anglo-Saxon or North German children, in that they would typically wear smaller versions of what their parents wore, or some kind of smock with small cloaks. But like in today, children grow quickly, and with, you know, in the modern day, we are a lot better off as far as materials go compared to children in the Viking Age. So with materials being a lot more scarce, it's reasonable to assume that you wouldn't invest too much in having nice and lots of clothes for your children, especially if you weren't of the upper class. But then again, the evidence is a bit limited on what that is like. Another interesting thing is about the Arabic author Ibn Fadlan has wrote about women in his encounter in Russia with Norse women. He writes about some of their jewelry, such as brooches. These he calls them cases. So these are these sort of shell, half sphere shaped little necklaces with designs on them. He writes about some being copper, gold, with designs of knives and swords on them. I think of a concave brooch. And the reason we think that when Ibn Fadlan refers to the cases like this, is how he describes them, is that these concave brooches, sort of like looking, the shape like power shells, actually, now I'm looking at a picture of them. They've been found in various parts of Europe, including England, Ireland, Iceland, and Russia, such as where Ibn Fadlan was and where he was writing all this down. And so the fact that he notes that it was only women wearing these is further evidence of the migration and settlement of Norse peoples around Europe, because the fact that we have found these women's jewelry in places like England and Ireland shows that the Norse not only raided these places, but also sought to settle these places, because they, you know, they brought their wives and children with them. And as far as the men go, the men would wear a tunic, trousers, and cloak. Now, the tunic is a long-armed shirt. It has no buttons, so think of a very, very long t-shirt. No, not t-shirt. It's long sleeve, so you want to keep warm. So this was typically went down to the knees and was fastened around your waist with a belt. From tapestries, we know a popular fashion trend at the time was when you would wear your tunic and you put your belt around your waist, you would sort of tuck and fold your tunic up and over to get a sort of folded look to it. So you couldn't see the belt. It was sort of you would roll the tunic up in there. And that's a fashion trend that also extends to England and France and even goes all the way up until the 13th century, where we can see in tapestries and descriptions of the peasantry rolling up their tunics over their belts. We don't know why particularly this was a trend, but but I suppose you could say the same thing like modern fashion trends. Sometimes you don't need a reason why. Some people just thought, this looks a bit neat. So they would put the tunic over their shoulders and go down to the knees. Over the shoulders, men would typically wear a cloak that was fashioned with a brooch. And so the cloak was usually gathered over the arm that the man would draw his sword or axe with. That way, it was possible by looking at a Norse warrior if they were right or left-handed. These cloaks were usually made with wool, sometimes flax, but most of the archaeological evidence points to wool. And for the wealthier classes, these were very bright colours and sometimes would have patterns or other weavings on them. And the brooches also would depend on your class. But it's important to note that since the Norse people were traders and most importantly raiders, if you were a raider of the lower class and you went on your boat to France and you raided and you pillaged and you looted, as you do, you would take nice shiny stuff back with you. So sometimes if you were of the lower class, you could find yourself wearing a rather nice brooch or having a rather nice cloak, because cloaks were found all over Western Europe at this time. We know Anglo-Saxons wore cloaks, we know the Irish wore cloaks, the French. Cloaks throughout the entire medieval period were a very popular thing to have, not only as a bit of a fashion statement, but also practically speaking, they could act, since they were usually thick wool, they would act as windbreakers and to keep warm. There isn't an awful lot of evidence about trousers, but the most widely accepted consensus is that they were rather large baggy pants, so they would be spread out quite large, you would tie it around your waist, and then they would go down to your shins. And around 3/4 of the way at the shin, just below the knee, you would tuck them into your socks. So they would wear very long socks called puttees. And they would basically be wraps around the socks that you would wrap around your shins to keep your legs warm. And you would tuck your pants into them. So this would give the pants a very baggy sort of look. So you would have this nice baggy pants, a tunic going down to the knees, and a nice cloak. As far as shoes, it would be much like the women, in which these were leather wraps or leather boots that you would wear to protect your feet from the elements. And as these clothes had no pockets, at least none that we have any evidence of, men would also wear belts or have string around their waist to hold their clothes up. And on the belts, the men may carry their purses or their to contain coins, combs, other grooming items, gaming pieces, coins, provisions, and they would also keep their weapons in their belts too at times, so you could tuck your axe into your belt. And for many of the Norse people who were farmers, this would always make a nice seed pouch for working the fields. And we also have evidence of men wearing caps. So these pointed caps or rounded, almost like beanies, sort of. Not quite as thick or as sort of industrially made, like consistent as the kind of hats we have today. But much like us today, especially me on this nice cold Southland day, wearing a nice woolen wrap around your head. Now, as the Vikings were a seafaring people, so not just by raiding, but also fishing and trading was very, very common back in these times, the Vikings were very, very good at waterproofing their clothing. And like me and George talked about on our History of Alcohol episode, the Norse people were famous beekeepers. And so they would use beeswax to treat the skin animal skins and their clothes to make them soft, and they would also use fish oil to waterproof them for when they're taking long voyages across the cold and harsh North Sea. Now, another aspect of Viking fashion is their relationship with the Byzantine Empire. Now, as we discussed in previous episodes, the Byzantine Empire is the remnants of the Roman Empire. So, upon the collapse of the Roman Empire, much of the institutions that made up the empire consolidated in modern-day Greece and Turkey into the Eastern Roman Empire, from their seat of power in Constantinople, modern-day Istanbul. A contemporary term to call them is the Byzantine Empire, after the city of Byzantium. And the upper class of Norse society had a lot of contact with the Byzantines. They would trade with them through Russia, but also they would serve as mercenaries. There is the very famous Varangian Guard, in which the Byzantine emperor would personally hire Norse and Germanic mercenaries and adventurers to serve in the army as a permanent fixture. This was because of the Vikings' fierce reputation as warriors and mercenaries and their willingness to work with the Byzantines. So the upper class had a lot of contact with the Byzantines. They were very connected with them. And we have Danish burials dating back to the late 900s that the upper class was also in contact with other European circles. And this is despite the fact that at this time, the Norse were not Christian yet. They were still pagan. But one of the most important fabrics that we know that they have is not only the colors, but also silk. Bright blue and bright red silk were highly sought after. And we can find these in the Mammon Prince burial in Jutland, Denmark, with his red and blue clothes were very wealthy and very intricate. And so the Mammon burial's clothes, we could see, wore trousers, tunic, and a nice red cloak. He had wool with silk details displaying gold and silver on them. And these are designs very reminiscent of that of the Byzantine Empire. Emperor Justinian I, who reigned from 527 to 565, was especially notorious for his use of silk. He started the Byzantine monopoly on the silk trade, and he would use his vast collection of silk to display his power and wealth. And the grave from Mammon is a very, very beautiful find. So in 1868, a farmer was digging into a mound when suddenly he chanced upon a grave, in which a very, very rich grave, which has been known from the grave from Mammon. A magnate was buried in the grave during the winter of 970. He was dressed in expensive clothes with ceremonial axes, silver and gold decorations. He was buried upon beds of cushions and an intricate carved coffin in a wooden chamber called a chamber grave. At his feet lay two axes, and the coffin lid lay a bronze bucket with two wooden buckets and a large wax candle. The man wore expensive clothing decorated with purple, blue, and red silk and embroideries of gold and silver. It's unknown whether or not the man in Mammon was a Christian or a pagan. There is arguments for both sides. There are motifs on one axe can be interpreted as Christian symbol, but there could also be a pagan symbol. The fine quality of the furnishings shows that he presumably was in the circle of King Harald Bluetooth, who the Bluetooth technology that we all know and love today is named after. So after this farmer discovered the grave in Mammon, it was followed up by extensive archaeological excavation and evidence. We also know he was part of the same village of a hoard of gold and other treasure that was found in a quarry near the same location. And you can see the objects from the Mammon grave and other grave findings in the late Iron Age in the Danish National History Museum, where I'm getting a lot of my sources from this also. And so it's really interesting that despite it being over 1,000 years, we still have, through this one man's grave, are able to find what the rich and wealthy wore. There are so many other smaller archaeological finds, but the grave from Mammon is significant because how much of it is intact. So much of it, in fact, is intact that we have historians able to recreate the clothing. They're at, like, I'm looking right now at a picture of the Danish History Museum's recreating it, in which, he has blue trousers that go up to the knee. He has wraps around his shins, a short tunic that ends just above the knee, and a nice silk cloak, all embroidered with gold and purple silk. Now, I hope you all enjoyed this episode today. I know it's just me at the moment, and I've done a bit of ranting. I'm very passionate about the Viking Age, so I really hope you enjoyed it. And I really wanted to talk about Viking fashion, because shows like Vikings, which are so popular and influence so many people, are always so dull and grey, when the Viking Age was so full of colour, of bright reds and oranges, of silk cloaks and silver ornaments. It was, and Netflix and Hollywood likes to portray them as these dirty, rugged people, when we know these were people who enjoyed fine clothes and took very good care of themselves and their hair and their personal hygiene. But I hope you all have enjoyed that. I'm Nightlife, and we'll be back next week with more historical content. Please check us out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. That means the world when you guys do that. And this show is available as a podcast from the Radio Southland website, radiosouthland.org.nz. You can stream or download from our site. Just look at the Programs tab. Links to stream podcasts can also be found on our Facebook page. You can subscribe to the Apple Podcast platform and never miss an episode, or look out for us on Spotify, give us a follow and give us a rating. It really helps us out, and we appreciate all of our listeners on audio platforms. A big shout out to all our Russian listeners too. In the app, it tells us where all the listeners are from, and there's quite a few in Russia, so shout out to the Russian listeners. You can also find our podcast on the updated accessmedia.nz app. Look for the Kiwi Fruit logo. Just download it for free from Google Play, and make sure you select Radio Southland as your station. I'm Nick, and you've been listening to Radio Southland and Free FM's Nightlife.
The preceding podcast was brought to you by Radio Southland with the support of New Zealand On Air. Their funding of accessmedia.nz makes these podcasts available. To find similar programs by other stations involved, go online to accessmedia.nz.